mountains, deserts and streams. The rise of Dos Cabezas and the outlaws I see in my dreams.
This is Kathy Damaris, volunteer reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona, reading from the April 2025 issue of Arizona Highways. Arizona Highways Magazine is celebrating its 100th anniversary with this, the April 2025 issue. This article is entitled 100 Years Hall of Fame. Like every great magazine, Arizona Highways measures up because of the incredible men and women on our masthead. But we couldn't do what we do without our contributors, the gifted artists, photographers, poets, and writers who give the bylines. We've had some superlatives over the years, and this month, as we celebrate our centennial, we're officially inducting 15 of them into the Arizona Highways Hall of Fame. I previously read the profiles on Esther Henderson, Ansel Adams, and Joseph Munch, so today I'm going to begin with Norman G. Wallace, photographer, 1885-1983, by William Wyckoff. As soon as Norman G. Wallace arrived in Arizona Territory from his native Ohio in 1906, he fell in love with the landscape of what soon would become the 48th state. Fortunately for Arizona Highways, he channeled that affection into photographing the natural beauty, small towns, historic sites, and just about everything else under the Arizona sun. And he blended his passion for photography with his career as a surveyor and civil engineer, a profession that took him to every corner of the Grand Canyon State with his camera by his side. Wallace's early surveying work sent him in many directions. From 1906 to 1931, he was employed as a draftsman and transit man for the Southern Pacific Railroad, surveying rail lines across the Southwest and Northern Mexico. But after he was laid off by the railroad during the Great Depression, he took a new position with the Arizona Highway Department, a predecessor of today's Arizona Department of Transportation, in 1932. He worked there as a transit man, surveyor, and civil engineer. Then from 1943 to 1955, he served as Arizona's chief location engineer. Throughout his 23 years with the Highway Department, he fundamentally shaped the state's developing road network. Soon after his hiring, he paved the way for modernizing Route 66. In later years, he lived in isolated tent camps around the state as he and his survey crews located and improved dozens of Arizona's signature highways. He would spend weeks away from his wife, Henrietta, whom he married in 1934, roughing it in the state's rugged backcountry. Wallace loved the work, spending days in out of the way places with a motley crew of chainmen, rodmen, levelers, brush cutters, and a cook. Recalling those years, Henrietta estimated her husband had camped in more than 36 spots around the state as he surveyed Arizona's modern highway network into existence. Many of Wallace's major surveying accomplishments with the Highway Department remain with us today. In addition to the improvements he supervised along Route 66, he located and modernized stretches of U.S. Routes 60, 70, and 80 in the central and southern portions of the state. Arizona's rugged canyons and mountains were constant challenges, but rarely discouraged him. He helped modernize present-day State Route 64, along with Grand Canyon's South Rim, the Apache Trail, State Route 88, east of Phoenix, and the Coronado Trail, present-day U.S. Route 191, through the White Mountains. And he was especially proud of his work along the Black Canyon Highway, later Interstate 17, which eventually forged a high-speed link between Phoenix and Flagstaff. Through all these expeditions, Wallace's camera was by his side, and he made thousands of pictures that recorded both his highway projects and the wider Arizona landscape he deeply cherished. When he wasn't working, he would take picture trips on his days off or enjoy longer excursions with a camping buddy or two to explore some corner of the state he wanted to see and photograph. Within a year of Wallace's hiring, his superiors at the highway department began to use his photographs in the department's signature magazine, Arizona Highways. Some of Wallace's pictures in the magazine documented state-funded work on highways, but increasingly his images of desert vistas, cactuses, sweeping cloudscapes, mining towns, and historic sites promoted a broader vision of Arizona's character and beauty. Indeed, Wallace's published works in the magazine between 1932 and 1955, photographs as well as dozens of articles he authored, helped transform Arizona Highways from a technical publication focused on road and bridge building into the state's flagship promotional periodical, one that reached millions of appreciative readers in the United States and beyond. Wallace's love of photography had begun early in life. His father, an accountant in Cincinnati, dabbled in picture taking, and young Wallace picked up the hobby. When he arrived in Arizona, he had a simple Kodak box camera, but in later years he acquired more sophisticated equipment. At various points in his career, he owned a large format 8x10 Bellows camera, a 5x7 Graflex, a medium format Zeiss Iconta, and a Ranca miniature camera, which he used for making color exposures beginning in the late 1930s. Wallace readily embraced color photography, a skill that served him well in polychromatic Arizona and in his work for Arizona Highways. He was especially proud of producing a photograph of Lower Oak Creek Canyon that would be the first color photograph to appear on the cover, July 1938. Henrietta even endured his photographic passions on their honeymoon when he spent hours photographing the Grand Canyon, a trip that produced a future cover photo and a story for the magazine, January 1935. As she lamented, "He was married to his cameras before he was married to me, and much of that romance continued in later years." But she grew to accept Wallace's desire for careful image-making and patiently endured his lengthy roadside stops to capture just the right scene. Wallace's voluminous logbooks meticulously documented his photographic adventures in more than 1,400 pages of detailed notes spanning many decades of picture taking. He noted the precise location and circumstances of thousands of exposures as he took them. Both his work-related images, state pictures, and his personal photographs, art pictures, were noted in the logbooks, and many were later annotated with bold stars for a good shot or complaints about bad luck or blurred prints. His daily dose of logbook entries would often include humorous commentary, such as the time he was camped north of Cameron on a chilly night beneath the stars at the Hotel de Wallace. Wallace embraced diverse subject matter in his photographs and stories. Arizona's natural landscape was vastly different from that of his native Midwest, and he learned the Latin names for desert cactuses and when and where yuccas and ocotillos would be in bloom. Many of his short, illustrated articles in the magazine focused on nature and carried headlines such as "Storm in the Arizona Desert," October 1935, "It's Springtime in the Desert," May 1936, and "Snow, Strange Sights Greet Arizonans," February 1937. In his personal collection of images, he had files labeled cactus plants, cloud effects, superstition mountains, and wild animals, among other subjects. He shared a similar passion for history and ancient Puebloan settlements. Hispanic churches and territorial forts always caught his eye. Predictably, his fascination with the past was captured through the lens of landscapes. Wallace often visited the windswept ruins of Wupatki National Monument, established in 1924, and loved camping there, sketching and photographing the surviving brick walls and towers. He also was drawn to Mission San Javier del Bac, not far from his home base in Tucson. He visited dozens of times, and his shot of the church was featured on an early cover of Arizona Highways, December 1932. He also published an article on the native history and scenery of Canyon de Chelly, Canyons of Death, November 1936. One of Wallace's favorite historical adventures, though, was following in the footsteps of Lieutenant Edward Beale's federally funded wagon road survey across present-day northern Arizona in 1857. Memorably, Beale's explorations featured 24 African camels that carried the expedition's equipment and provisions. Wallace, delighted in rereading Beale's journals, following the precise route of his journey and photographing the scenes along the way. In Arizona Highways, he published his detailed narrative of the trip, The Trail of the Camels, in October 1934. The highways that Wallace modernized became leading characters in his photography and writing. He had an aesthetic attraction to a beautiful road. Henrietta recalled that he loved to take a picture of a road that was always curving and that she knew when and where he would stop along the highway. As his archive grew, he organized hundreds of his images by highway number, making it easy to find them and use them in his work. For Wallace, a highway was a story that unfolded across the Arizona landscape, taking travelers up and over spectacular grades, across rugged terrain, and through mining towns and desert scenery. Some of Wallace's best photographs and articles that appeared in Arizona Highways literally featured Arizona's highways, and they were powerful promotional pieces that celebrated the state's good roads and all they traversed. In one of his last contributions to the magazine in May 1955, he penned a lengthy piece on one of his most beloved roads, Arizona 66, the Scenic Wonderland Highway. The essay follows Route 66 from east to west as it crosses Navajo land. Most of the terrain will be of the wide open spaces type, summits the pine-studded Coconino Plateau near Flagstaff, the finest part of the state, and descends toward the Colorado River, the vastness of the desert regions of western Arizona. It was a captivating journey Wallace had taken countless times as he worked to modernize the Mother Road. Wallace and Henrietta moved from Tucson to Phoenix in 1950, and Wallace retired from the Highway Department in 1955 at age 70. The couple witnessed the extraordinary expansion of the Valley of the Sun that saw Phoenix's population grow from 100,000 in 1950 to 800,000 in 1980. Wallace spent his retirement organizing his photographs before donating a large collection to the state in 1968. His work was later honored in a display at the state capitol in 1976. He kept making photos, too, taking short trips around the state, revisiting familiar spots, and favoring ektachrome color slide film. There were pictures of Arizona scenery, special bridges and overpasses, and more intimate local portraits of a sunset at the house or a neighbor's flower garden. Wallace remained engaged with the visual scene in these later images, but that world was shrinking, a far cry from his earlier far-flung adventures. Wallace died in Phoenix in 1983 at age 98, and Henrietta gave many of his remaining photographs to the Arizona Historical Society in 1984. The collection grew larger thanks to donations from Arizona Highways in 1999, and today, Wallace's legacy is preserved in the Norman G. Wallace Photograph Collection at the AHS in Tucson. Occupying 55 boxes of material, the collection celebrates Wallace's prolific photographic talents, his long career creating Arizona highways, and the visual treasures of a state he dearly loved. William Rykoff, who gave us this profile of Norman G. Wallace, is the author of Riding Shotgun with Norman Wallace, Rephotographing the Arizona Landscape, University of New Mexico Press, 2000. Kelly Vaughn provides us with the profile of Alan C. Reed, photographer, 1916 to 2009. Prolific, that was Alan C. Reed's work for Arizona Highways, and really, that's an understatement. For decades, beginning in July 1949, Reed photographed and authored more than 50 articles for the magazine, many of which were about the Navajo and other indigenous people of the state. In August 1952, for example, he wrote and photographed a feature titled Navajo Tribal Fair. To Kiwazee, it was a very special sun that peeped over the plateau of his native Navajo land that cool mid-September morning, Reed wrote. With his robes pulled tightly about his shoulders, he sat leaning against a wheel of his father's wagon, anxiously watching the eastern sky. He had waited silently in the darkness long before the first rosy glow of dawn tinted the wispy clouds. Reed was a natural storyteller whose words were as painterly as many of his images. Born in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania, in 1916, he attended the Art Center College of Design in Los Angeles. There, he met his wife, Shirley. During World War II, Lockheed hired him to illustrate military aircraft parts and repair manuals. After the war, the Reeds relocated to Phoenix, where they opened an advertising agency, a pursuit Reed balanced with his extensive travels across the Southwest, making photographs and writing about his experiences. And even though many of Reed's stories took place in the Four Corners region of Arizona, he didn't shy away from more central locations. In March 1951, Arizona Highways published a 10-page feature wherein Reed did double duty. "She's quite a character, the Verde River, with moods by the mileful," he wrote. "She'll ponder for a few hundred yards in deep meditation, burst forth in a gray spurt of foam and spray, splashing through the shallows, swirling down the narrows, splitting at a sandbar, racing herself to the other end and running her fingers through the tall grass and willows of a half-submerged island, only to pause again, catch her breath, and leg along in another deep, quiet pond." After Reed retired, he relocated to Greenhaven, where he continued to make photographs while running a real estate sales office. Although he died in 2009, his legacy lives on in the pages of Arizona Highways. Ruth Rudner is the author of the profile on Joyce Rockwood, writer, 1907 to 1982. One cloudy day in 1954, Joyce Rockwood Munch was dusting bookshelves when a single ray of sun fell directly onto the spine of Geoffrey Chaucer's The Canterbury Tales. Understanding it as a sign, she pulled the book from the shelf, opened it, and read. One that April, with his surest suit, Chaucer had invited her on a journey into spring. Her article, Pilgrimage into Spring, was published in Arizona Highways in February 1955, then reprinted in the March 2018 issue. Reading her piece in preparation for my own article about spring for that issue, I was awed by the erudition I ascribe to anyone who reads Chaucer. I never get very far. I did, though, note that we shared the sense of adventure any journey into spring implies, a journey into the start of things. We also share the last name of our photographer husbands. She is a mother-in-law I never met. I think we would have been friends. In 2018, editor Robert Steve liked the idea of including us both in the same issue. Growing up in Two Rivers, Wisconsin, as the daughter of a college professor and the middle child of three, Joyce charted her own particular route through life. When her father accepted a job at the University of California, Berkeley, the journals she had already kept for years acknowledged her sadness at leaving close friends in Two Rivers, but brimmed with excitement at spending her last 2 years of high school in Berkeley. Like most literary teenagers, Joyce wrote poetry, poetry of longing, of exploration, of the search for meaning. Reading a notebook filled with her teenage poems, I was as moved by the intensity of feeling expressed in them as I was by the freedom in her writing to voice those feelings. The notebook of poems was one of many packed in a box of Joyce's journals, articles, and unpublished stories. In another box, I found somewhat later writings, stories labeled with the prizes they had won, typed copies of her journal entries, and tear sheets of articles written for Arizona Highways and other publications. Most of her published writing was bylined Joyce Rockwood Munch, but she was a writer, if unpublished, long before she met Joseph Munch. An experienced equestrian, she and Joseph met on horseback in a place called Happy Valley, California. I've recently discovered this was an organized ride, although I prefer the version I imagine in which the two of them, each alone on a horse, loping across vast meadows from opposite directions, stop to chat. Finding they both are artists, enamored with nature, they marry and go on to work together. I know nothing about their courtship, nor does David, their son, which is probably as it should be. Although Joyce wrote pages and pages about a college love, I found only two journal entries connected to the relationship between Joyce and Joseph. While she was in the hospital, producing her only child, she wrote, "I didn't think it would be so hard to give birth." This woman, imaginative and attentive to everything, had apparently not considered the reality of childbirth. She did, however, have her journal with her. A few days later, she wrote, "I love watching Joe hold the baby." Joyce was almost as excited about a new notebook in which to write as she was about the writing itself. "I like this journal so much," she wrote. "As soon as Dad pulled it out of the box, it looked interesting, and when he said I might have it, I knew it was to be my journal. I have a number of short stories I want to put into volumes. I have written some new sketches, and there are several that are waiting impatiently to be written. I understand the excitement of a new blank book, the anticipation of all that will go into it, the physical movement of a pen across the page, the reality of writing." Joyce's image of herself was always that of a writer, which on some level makes it curious that at Berkeley she majored in physical education. There is no one to ask how she became a gym teacher, although with Title IX, the landmark gender equity legislation, far in the future, it was one of the professions open to athletic women. Joyce was involved in her high school and college newspapers, too, and she continued to enter her stories in contests and record hopes and ambitions in her journals, but she never expressed a wish to major in literature or writing. She quotes from a letter written to her by "Dear C.E.K., possibly a teacher, I never wanted to dissuade you, but wanted you to realize that there were two sides to majoring in phys ed. There is true joy in this field, and not the smallest joy in being able to know and play with the girls. Please don't get too highbrow. It would be sad not to be able to converse with you. You must remember that phys ed did crowd out a lot of Thackeray and Aristotle. So keep a little bit of ordinary stock of conversation and thought around, won't you?" Joyce's athleticism was useful when she and Joseph began exploring the Sierra Nevada on pack trips. According to David, who was pulled out of school to go along but was required to write reports about the trips, they led donkeys and mules carrying their gear. Steep and rocky, the Sierras are terrain for serious hikers and adept riders. Kings Canyon, a favorite area for Joyce and Joseph, requires skill and attention, both natural to Joyce. When editor Raymond Carlson sent Joyce to Chiricahua National Monument for an Arizona Highway Stories, he called her one of our most adventurous writers. Wanting her stories out there, Joyce entered them in writing contests, winning 2 first prizes, a second place, and a couple of honorable mentions. Joyce was in her 50s when she left her marriage and moved to Arizona. In 1970, she wrote the editor of Arizona Magazine, a publication of the Arizona Republic, suggesting an article on dog training. College for Canines was, in fact, an idea close to the heart of this dog lover, but what strikes me is Joyce saying she hoped her name would ring a bell with the editor, that he had used work of hers when she was the writing part of the Joseph and Joyce Munch team. "I am now using my maiden name," she continued, "and doing my own photography. I am living in Sun City and am completely sold on Arizona." In June 1972, Arizona Highways featured an article with Joyce Rockwood's byline. "I imagine the sight of her own name was liberating. Living in a time when married women generally used their husband's last names, and given that she worked on articles and books with her husband, Joyce certainly felt pressure to use his name. In several books written or edited apart from Joseph, she remains identified as Joyce Rockwood Munch. While most of Joyce's articles are accompanied by Joseph's images, a couple feature David's. I wonder how often that happens. A magazine article by a mother and son. I also wonder, in that case, she wasn't delighted the two did share a name. I think of her as Joyce Rockwood, a writer separate from her husband, no matter how many articles and books they did together, no matter how many years and adventures they shared. Her Arizona Highways articles and those for other publications were the product of good research plus lived experience. If she wrote about a place, she went there. I'm certain she was never without local wildflower or tree books, as she wrote about the Arizona desert, Arizona's mountains, Marble Canyon, Glen Canyon, California Sierras, and much of the Southwest. She and Joseph spent a great deal of time on the Navajo Nation, and although her writing about the tribe is of the time, by which I mean that while she and Joseph had real friends among the Navajo people, they also viewed them as exotic. It also is respectful and caring. Because she and Joseph were close friends with Harry and Mike Goulding, proprietors of a lodge and trading post in Monument Valley, they spent much time there. In the September 1960 issue of Arizona Highways, Joyce wrote a piece about an Arizona road trip that covered virtually the entire state, which by then she probably knew by heart, so much time had she and Joseph spent there. but she wrote with a special fondness for Monument Valley, which had become a tribal park 2 years earlier, and it was Yosef's photos shown to film director John Ford that influenced Ford to use Monument Valley as a location for many Westerns. Joyce, too, would have fit right in as a cast member in Ford's films. "Friday, I went bareback riding," she wrote in her journal on October 10, 1926. "I had quite a time getting Drusilla to canter, but when she began, she went like the wind. Could anyone have a more perfect image of their mother-in-law?" That concludes today's readings from Arizona Highways. This is Kathy Damaris, volunteer reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona.
I love you, Arizona. Your mountains, deserts, and streams rise of Dos Cabezas and the outlaws I see in my dreams. I love you, Arizona.
If you miss a program, you can get it on demand at sunsounds.org. Log on to sunsounds.org, left-click on Broadcast Info and Audio, then under Programming Links, left-click on Demand Podcasts. In addition, you can now listen to Sun Sounds on your Echo Dot or other smart home device.